Just stay right here, Michael, because you're going to be getting the first one. So, Michael, it's my presentation to give you, my pleasure to give you this special recognition from the Federal CIO Council's PSYCOP Community Practice in your role as Vice President for Research and Director of Knowledge Formation at this special conference. Thank you for participating.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Prangy, could you come up here, please? John, congratulations.
Thank you.
This is a special recognition for your role both as director of the Acquaint program and now in your role with the Language Computer Corporation. Thank you for your expertise and your contributions. Thank you. Lola? I think I've known Lola about the longest of all the people on the panel. I was there near the beginning of the Global Change Master Directory. You've done a great job over many years. As manager, this is a special recognition given to you as manager of the Global Change Master Directory, chair of the Interagency Global Change Data and Information System subgroup of the Global Change Research Program. Thank you for your excellent presentation and your work over many, many years, Lola.
Thank you.
Christiane, before I give you yours, I felt to say that I found it amusing as Michael referred to his fellow linguists as examples in his presentation. But the one he used for Christiane, I thought, you know, you might want to consider one more what we might call politically correct semantic relationship. He referred to her as the smartest woman in the world. In politically correct Washington, D.C., we would say the smartest person in the world. So as not to infer that there's another man who is equally or greater smart than she is, but to be politically correct. Christiana, you have certainly distinguished yourself with your PhD in linguistics from Princeton University and being part of the team that developed WordNet, and we greatly appreciate what you've done for the community. Congratulations.
I hope the statement's
All right. And Brian? Brian, I've had the pleasure of working with on the Data Reference Model 2.0. He is the former co-chair of the Architecture and Infrastructure Committee's Data Architecture Subcommittee, and as you heard, had a strong role in bringing data sharing to the Data Reference Model 2.0. Brian, we recognize your contributions. Wish you well in private industry. Thank you. Now, of course, we have one for Lucien, but we can't give it to him without having Terry Jansen. Terry, would you come forward, please, and to say a few words, maybe even roast him a little bit, because Terry is the member of our community that I think has worked with Lucien the longest.
Probably true.
So, Terry, roast away. Lucien, come sit over here, please. The roastie usually gets to sit on the hot seat here.
Can you hear me? I didn't prepare a roast today, so disappointed there. Although I've seen Lucien do many roasts in the past, so he deserves one. But as you all know, Lucien mentioned this morning that he's retired from CSC as of last Friday. I think he must have over 30 years of experience and work in the field. He's had a long and distinguished career during that period of time. I met Lucien at CSC back in 1985. We worked together in the Advanced Technology Laboratory. And we were both working on things like the taboo word artificial intelligence, which has now laid the foundation for much of the work we're doing today in ontologies and semantic, you know, technology, reasoning. Many great researchers have done many great things in those early 80s. To make that happen. Lucien has been involved in many initiatives in the technology over the years. I've witnessed Lucien mentoring and helping people in their careers many times. And I've always been amazed at how much he's done to help people. especially new college graduates that have turned into major participants in the industry. We work closely together at CSC, and back in 1991, he helped me join him at Argonne National Laboratory to their advanced technology activities as well, where we worked together for many years. Again, working in technologies like artificial intelligence and the forerunners to the current technology of what we're seeing today. Lucien left Argonne back in the late 90s, and I think single-handedly was awarded more SBIRs than anybody I know over a period of about 5 years. He's continued to consult with government. Of course, he's been with CSC in the most recent years. And I'd like to mention that one of the people that he helped mentor and advance their careers was myself. He was single-handedly responsible for getting me to join the PhD program at George Mason University. He was a few years ahead of me. He graduated a couple of years ahead of me. But in my dissertation, I give credit to Lucien for getting me there to begin with and to helping me along the way. So I'd just like to give him credit and thank him for helping lots of people and making major advancements. And I wish him a long and prosperous retirement and a career in consulting. And if you want to win a proposal, call upon Lucien because he's got a good win rate. Lucien,
Terry, thank you very much. It gives my heart joy to see Terry's success. He's now at Lockheed Martin Company. He's going to be investigating semantic interoperability, and I think that based on this meeting, he's just going to have to rewrite his program plan because he's now jumped ahead by 2 years. Thank you.
So actually, in the planning of this program, to just give you an insight into another aspect of Lucien's life you may not know, we were scheduling our meetings around Lucien's Broadway show performances. He's a very accomplished singer on Broadway. And so he's retiring, yes, but he's retiring also to pursue this dual career, to foster the other talent he has. So Lucien, it's been a great experience to work with you. Thank you for bringing this proposal to us for this meeting. All of the people here are beneficiaries of what you conceptualized. So we're giving you this as a DRM 2.0 author and building DRM 3.0 and Web 3.0 conference organizer from SciCop. Thank you very, very much, Lucien. And best wishes to you.
Thank you.
All right, now we'll turn it to Lucien, and he will, in the remaining time, and we apologize, we've run short on time now, but you do have a wonderful lunch waiting for you after the 10 minutes or so for questions, and we specifically encourage you to sit at tables with those you would like to ask questions of and to introduce yourselves and begin dialoguing with them.
Okay, well, rather, I'm just going to make one statement right now. I was going to show some slides. I'm not going to. The question I asked myself, which started this whole thing off, was whether at this point in time we know enough to go forward in a simple way. If we go back to the early days, and I've asked Professor Sibley is in the back to be with me because he was there in those early days as an active participant. We had a way of modeling data back then, which essentially caused, I call it the lost gold process. We had a lot of gold that was in descriptive form, and we threw it all away to create the data models because we had very limited computers. Professor Sibley tried in the 1980s to bring it forward with data dictionaries, but it was kind of like too much for everybody to cope with. But, you know, we had a lot of simple ideas. Codd started out with a very simple relational model. By 82, there were about 32 precepts in it, and the end here, he had 389. So knowledge marches on. But yet, my feeling is that based upon what we have at the master directory, we could tell the government the following. It is now worth the effort to
to document your systems fully, because we are developing the automated tools that can actually use that information you provide, and we can build the gold standard of knowledge in the scientific disciplines, and we can build descriptions of knowledge in the non-scientific disciplines, which are usable and worth the effort. So my thesis is, and I think we can start, but we have panelists here, and I will shut up.
DRM 2.0 strikes me as bottoms-up, technology-driven. Hey, these are the sorts of things we could do, and there's, I don't know if it's fair or not, but it seems like there's a one-size-fit-all kind of approach to data modeling. How do we shift from the technology push to market pull? I mean, this stuff is really important in terms of how you structure enterprises, is what level of data integration does the enterprise need? And I suspect there are fairly simple concepts that could have enormous impact. And how do we shift the data reference model from the technology-driven approach to what are the needs of the enterprise, what the market pull approach?
Well, some of the answer could be given in activity going on now, which is characterized as Web 2.0, which is the use of mashups, where we cannot have been unable to integrate in the past in the back end. People have decided to integrate in the front end. And that is, now Lola is currently developing a roll your own portal. So I think that if we allow people to define, you know, what they want in terms of a front end look, that could guide us in terms of developing the back end integration that is appropriate for that particular community. And one of the things we did in the DRM 2.0, Brian and I colluded on this, we said, let the people who know what they're doing do the work. And so there's a big emphasis on communities of interest. So my answer is, there's some new tools out there, let's let the communities of interest use them, and then they will give us a requirement that will drive the back end.
To make, I think, related to that, but to the entire panel, and that is that I think you're all doing very good work. I think DRM 3.0 is certainly a fine standard. However, what's happening is that we're not getting this deployed into major government programs. We're not getting it into RFPs with major budgets, and a lot of people that are doing semantic technology today are starting to back off. I know that SciCorp, Doug Linitz, told me just recently he took a $3 million hit this year in his funding. I know that I work as a scientist at NGA's basic and applied research lab, where I have the dubious distinction of being the only information technology guy among neuroscientists, physicists, astrologers, astronomers. Physicists. And they tasked me when I walked in the door to get rid of the semantic technologies programs because they didn't have faith that the science was there yet. I am going back to them now and saying, look, we need to take the pieces we have developed, which are very good, and we need to package them up and perhaps try to become more like a science than we have been. We've been fragmented. We've had, give you an example. The Semantic Technologies Conference this year was booked at the same time that the European Union came over for the FOIS conference Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. So there was no chance for collaboration between the European Union guys, who were mainly formal ontologies. This was called Formal Ontologies for Information Systems, and the Semantic Web guys. We don't see a whole lot of cooperation between the DoD community and the intelligence community in terms of synchronizing their efforts. So I believe that we need to do a better job as a community in semantic interoperability of trying to get this more like a science. I mean, as you all know, being from Lockheed Martin, one of the projects that is dear to my heart is the Relaunchable Space Vehicle, which is going to go to the moon and into Mars. You know, people have taken the sciences and they've built upon them incrementally. They have come up with lessons learned. They reuse what they've learned and don't make the same mistakes twice. But we in the semantic technologies community don't really communicate that well among camps. I know that I spoke to Jim Handler, and I know that he and Tim Berners-Lee are working on a new RDF, which will take some of LDL and put it down at a lower level. So they're going down somewhat and talking about kind of web science there. The European Union is talking more about higher order logics. They've got their own standard ontology called DULCE. I think that where we're going as a community needs to be focused more. And I hate to use this word, but I almost think of it like we should be treating ourselves like an ontology science, a reasoning science, where we start taking human subjects, testing out our techniques, our methods, putting them in programs where the analysts or the users of whatever type start to use them, and then measure how much they accept or reject that in their tradecraft. And start to come up with, lessons from one community passed to another. For example, DRM 3.0 may become, the de facto standard at some point. We don't know, but I think that we've got to get to a point where we are sharing and advancing, and I'd like to have the panelists' thoughts on how they see the future in this regard.
Maybe, Brian, since you've been directly in the government most recently, maybe you should comment what challenges you've faced.
Okay. Is this on? Can you hear me? Okay. Okay, very quickly, we only have a few minutes left, just make sure take the point. Understand that to the folks out there, it's a hierarchy of needs. And, in some ways I have trepidation about speaking with such an august panel because I don't know whether what I will say will come off as profound or ignorant, but here we go. Basic elements of this is we need to capture and store our information. We need to extract the facts out of the information. We need to aggregate and utilize those facts, and then we have to do something with them. If you go down and talk to a lot of the analytical environments, what they're worried about most is knowing what they know, being able to find the information that they can use. That the ability to use semantic interoperability is for many of our analytical colleagues is the next step. The first step is just simply knowing finding what they need to know. Next step is essentially. And this is where this domain applies, is when you have open access to knowledge. As I said before, if you can use this sort of technologies against an open corpus of information, that's where it's most powerful. Don't forget that we also have issues of, as soon as you get into information sharing, you get into issues of privacy, information sharing, the access control, access management components as well. It's a multifaceted problem, and you have to address, you have to know where you are in each tier, and know how each tier relates to one another so you can be able to make forward progress. And that's about as much time as I would have for comments. Thank you.
Terry, I would thank you for your comments about Lucy and your question. And I think Frank Olkin will speak to part of what you're talking about in his talk at the end of the day. Other questions? Tom?
I just want to ask myself something. There's several different ways that you guys are using the word context. Right. In one case, we're emphasizing all of them sort of also at a minimum are talking about space and time. But could you just sort of clarify or elaborate on that? Because that seems to be central to the direction that you're advocating, we move.
Anyone want to take first shot? Well, John, how about John, since you were.
I think if you are doing any kind of reasoning or inference, you need to understand multiple levels of context. The obvious ones are both the spatial and temporal, but also you have to understand the context in which the requirement was placed. What's the background of the users I mean, those are contextual things as well. People use language in a very dynamic way, and so you really do have to understand where they are coming from and the way in which they are using language, because I use a term one way, Michael might use it in an entirely different way, but on the surface it looks the same. So,
Michael, since you're named.
So I think John's right, and even with formal languages like logic, there's a sort of a matter of interpretation. The interpretation of a statement in logic is what we call the inferential closure of that statement. So what are all the things which can be derived from it? And the things which can be derived from it, or the things that should be derived from it, are critically dependent on the context in which it's used. So if I say that something is true at a particular time, well, I can say that, but it's probably not generally true. So, for example, if I say that the boiling point of water, the freezing point of water is 0 degrees Celsius, that's generally true, but it's generally true at one atmospheric pressure, so at sea level, on Earth. Under a given value of the gravitational constant. All of these things interact together, even something as simple as dealing with time and space. So the reason we focused, I think, on temporal context and on spatial context is that they're relatively easy to reason about, but they're not by any means trivial to reason about. For example, they can't be treated independently. So, for example, if I say that in 2006 there were 100,000 doctors, that's true for the United States as a whole. It's not true for Baltimore. If I say there were 100,000 doctors, that's true in 2006. It wasn't true in 1900. So you actually need to do pretty complicated reasoning just to combine temporal and spatial context. If you take other contexts, such as, for example, the context is supposed to be a model of the real world into account, you can make claims. If I say that there are in the year 2000 BC there were 10,000 unicorns in Greece, that may or may not be true, depending on what I mean by Greece, what I mean by 2000 BC, where exactly I set the epoch, and whether or not I'm talking in the context of the real world, or the context of a particular book, or the context of a particular mythology. So context reasoning is not at all straightforward, and it is very important if we're going to, for example, use the fact that the stuff that we're extracting from if we're going to use, for example, information which is extracted from the web,
comment also, because context is a linguistic issue.
Yes, certainly, and I use the word quite differently, but I have to say less interestingly than Michael. Linguists call context simply the surrounding words or text. Surrounding the target word that you're trying to identify or the concept behind that word. So this is a static process to some extent. I haven't used the word static in connection with WordNet, but it is static in the sense that it assumes generic concepts, and the information about these concepts is context independent. And I think it's a big challenge for people like Michael and John to put this in a dynamic time and place dependent context.
Although I think one want to point out that even in language processing, the context which other terms give you is dependent on the use that you're making and the interpretation that you're trying to give a piece of text. It's not by any means the case that there's a single logical representation of any document. There are multiple logical representations of any document, dependent in part, unfortunately, for those of us who would like the world to be neat, in part on the nature of the person doing the reading or the system doing the reading.
Let me do one quick follow-up back to Lucian. So in the context of the title of this today's program, right, and talking about Data Reference Model 3, the ability to look at description and context together, you know, how is the word being used there?
The title was suggested by Brand, but I think what we're looking for is, we want interoperability. We must be able to determine that what looks like a likely match to an information need that we have actually is focused in its surroundings, so that we can determine whether it is that match or not. Because it's not just the data itself, but the surrounding data that it tells us whether it's what we want, but also bring up the security issue, whether we're allowed to have it.
On me, I was trying to connect the morning and the afternoon programs, and was using context in the sense that Christiana just said. In other words, the surrounding information. I think we're going to have to go to lunch, because lunch is waiting for us. Let me again thank the panel and thank all of you, and encourage you to come back promptly at 1 o'clock, because I think we will have everybody introduce themselves as part of giving you an opportunity to document that you were part of this conference. And we'll see yourself on the DVD eventually. Thanks again to Lucy and to the panel. Let's give them a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Please seek them out at lunch, etc.